So one of the things you talked about in last week's episode that I wanted to follow up on is the idea that you are actively having a very clear difference between the company that you own and run, but also the Jay Bear that gets out there and speaks. Because I'll be honest with you, I'm doing this for myself because I want to grow the speaking side of my business. Mm-hmm. And I've been watching what you're doing and how you're doing it. And one of the things you appear to be very actively involved in is the National Speaker Association. Can you give me a 30 seconds on why I should care and, more importantly, why I should join?
You know, when I first started as a speaker 10 years ago, I went to a National Speakers Association event and realized there is a lot more to being a speaker than giving a speech. That the business of speaking is actually just as, if not more important, as the actual speaking part. And I also realized, DP, simultaneously, that of all the different worlds that I inhabit at some level, and it's lots because of the variety of clients that we serve in my company, of all of them, the single best community of professionals I have ever seen is the speaking community. Almost universally extraordinary in terms of their willingness to share information, take one another under their mutual wings, and lift each other up. It truly is a rising tide lifts all ships environment. And some of my best friends in speaking are those that really brought me along when I was just a kid. I wasn't a kid, I was 40, but I certainly was a kid in terms of not knowing anything about the speaking business. So it just really is a shining light. And I've learned so much and continue to try and give back to new speakers and even experienced speakers who feel like I have something to add. There's a lot of local chapters as well. They vary somewhat in their size and their quality, frankly, but I really like the association. They have a great new executive director as well that's taking it to new heights. So I'm a big proponent of the NSA. And also, you know, I'm a seventh generation entrepreneur. My son's an eighth generation entrepreneur. And my family usually comes from small or medium-sized towns. So we talked about last week. And in my family, going back, you know, to the 1800s, if you're a professional or a business owner or whatever, you join and become a leader in whatever the professional association is of your career. Like my grandfather owned a furniture store. He was the president of the Midwestern Furniture Retailers Association, right? My dad was an insurance company, was president of that association, right? And president of Rotary and president of the Chamber of Commerce. And that was just kind of how I was raised, that if you are a professional and you care about your craft, you put the time, money, and effort into whatever the association is that represents your craft. And so I just wouldn't have it any other way.
Wow, you're hitting me between the eyes because I'm naturally a lone wolf, so I'm not inclined to join things. But everything you just said, I've heard from some of the members here in Madison, Wisconsin, where I live, that I guess one of the things I heard that I want to test with you is they said to me, you have to understand no one's in competition with you because everybody understands each one of us is unique. We have our own capabilities and styles and everything else. And consequently, no one's going to look at you and say, ooh, you're stealing my light or my thunder. Instead, they're going to say, hey, I can help you. Can you help me? Can we help each other? Can we help support everybody? I see you nodding your head. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm not just saying this for effect. My best friends in the speaking business are the four or five people that I occasionally lose gigs to and vice versa, because we have the most commonality of experience. Right. And in the National Speakers Association, the founder of the association 50 or 60 years ago now, I think, he once said the whole role of the association is to grow the pie, right? It's to grow the pie of speaking opportunities for the members, not for the members to compete against one another. So I know it seems like some sort of weird Pollyanna Atlantis where people are competitors but don't act like it, but it really is like that, generally speaking. Obviously, there's always outliers, but I have to tell you, having come from politics, my original career was politics, right? So having come from politics, which is by definition a zero-sum game, and then to end up in speaking, which is literally the exact opposite culturally, I thought it was fake. Like when I first got involved, I thought the whole thing like, okay, everybody's just putting on this act and then they're going to put a knife in my back. And I realized that, you know, after a couple of years, there were no knives. And I was like, this is unbelievable. How is this even possible in this day and age? And it continues to largely be the case culturally. And I think it's pretty special.
This episode of the Nonfiction Brand Podcast is brought to you by Culture Chicken Brand Egg. What's that? It's one of my most requested presentations, now available as in-person live or virtual online presentations. If you've got a group or association that loves presentations that inspire, inform, entertain, and get you going at the same time, we should talk. Head on over to dpknewton.com/speaking to download my full speaker media kit today. And let's start talking about how I can help you get your party started. Wow, you have made a very convincing argument there. And I especially like what you said about getting involved with whatever organizations or associations are associated with what you do, because I spent, a lot of Nonfiction Brand listeners already know this, I spent, 20 plus years as the creative director and copywriter at high performing agencies. My clients loved me, but no one outside the agency knew my name because I didn't go to Addy Awards. I didn't join any of those things because it always felt inauthentic to me.
Yeah, be about the work. I get it.
Right. And it was, my work speaks for myself. And guess what? That's not true. I always expected people would give me credit for the work I did. And then I realized down the road at a certain point, no, sometimes you have to go out there and reach for the credit you deserve by not being a narcissist, not getting out there and say, me, 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 look at me, 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 but at least saying, I'm sharing this with you. I know this, I'm sharing it with you. What's the takeaway from that? Thank you for this gift. Wow, you really know your stuff. And it's not me talking about how smart, good, or whatever I might be. It's about you saying, wow, you're smart and giving and sharing. And that's why I love having you on this podcast, Jay. You're just such a great example of that in action.
Thanks. Well, you know, the giving and sharing part makes all the difference. A lot of people feel, as you once felt, that they are inherently uncomfortable with promoting themselves because they don't want to sell or they don't like to promote. If you are giving away knowledge or inspiration or information or education or entertainment, you're not selling. Now, it has the same effect. I wrote a book called Utility, which continues to be a really popular book all about the notion that helping beats selling and how to do that in business. Probably a good read for this audience. My friend Rory Vaden, who is a spectacular speaker, also recently inducted into the Speaking Hall of Fame and is actually a great personal branding consultant, has a saying, and I don't know if it is his, but I learned it from him, which says, there's no need to be nervous when your heart is on service. And I think that is particularly applicable to personal branding. If you're going about it as, how many people can I help? And some of those people will then help me, then you got nothing to worry about. You don't need to feel like you're doing something distasteful or inappropriate because you simply aren't.
Yeah, that is so important. And it goes back to what I always say about demonstrating who you are, what you do, and how you do it by actually doing who you are, what you do, and how
right.
you do it.
Yes, yes.
In everything
doing you do. Doing parts and core important, yeah.
Right. You know, let's face it, there are salespeople who get out there and do all the smoke and mirrors, but then there's another type of sales, which is all about demonstrating the product, what it does and how it works. And if you need it, you know, buy it. And I would rather, I hate to say this, I guess I'd rather be the Ronco salesman who's like, look, it'll take care of this. It can do this. It can do this. It can do this. Buy it or don't buy it. We don't care. Demonstrating who you are, what you do, and how you do it.
Just tell me the truth.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
And I think being consistent, right? That's the challenge that a lot of people have. And I continue to struggle with this, is consistency of application. My problem is that I'm interested in so many things that I tend to weaken my own personal brand by not staying in my lane. In fact, I was talking to one of my friends who's a speaker, and he's a very, very well-known customer service and customer experience speaker and author. His name is Shep Hyken, one of the most well-known customer service thought leaders in the world. And we had a conversation one day, and he's like, Jay, it's weird because every time you write a book, it's about something different. He's like, it's kind of related, but one book's about social, and one book's about content marketing, and one book's about word of mouth, and one book's about customer service, and one book's about customer experience. He's like, what everybody else does is they pick a topic and they write 11 books about that topic over 20 years. You write a different kind of book every 3 years. How come? And I'm like, because I get bored. I'm interested in a lot of things, but the from a personal brand standpoint, that can actually get to be a little bit problematic, which is one of the reasons why I try and stick to my knitting, no pun intended, with the suit thing, right? That I'm always wearing the plaid suit when I'm in public, because I know I can stay with that element. Now, that's a sort of, you know, frivolity. It's just a window dressing. It doesn't really speak to my value as an expert, what have you, but people remember it. And the reason I started it wearing the plaid suits all the time was because I wanted meeting planners to have something, a story to tell other than just, yeah, he gave a speech. Speech was really good. And so the way we do it, I don't know if you know the story, DP. So the way we do it, it's not just me wearing a plaid suit, right? And I've got a bunch of them. When a meeting planner books me to give a presentation offline or now online video presentation, they get a link to a website, and you can go there now if you want. It's dressjbear.com, dressjbear.com. And we built this little app, and you can pick out what suit you want me to wear at your event. And then it goes on my calendar, and I make sure to wear that suit.
I remember seeing that, and I wanted to ask you about that. Was it an Instagram post where you get to select which suit he's wearing? Or I couldn't remember, so I'm glad you brought it up. And for those people who are listening to this episode who didn't listen to the previous one, what we're talking about is what I like to call Jay's penchant for plaid. He loves him some plaid suits. And I'm talking, I think of them as TV test pattern suits. They literally are fantastic for anyone who might be wondering if their eyesight's going, because it'll constantly be testing your sense of humor, and it'll make it very, very easy for you to spot Jay in any room, because he's the guy with the loudest, most, but it's, I will say, very tasteful.
I'm trying to thread the needle between vibrancy and caricature, right? I don't want to be like Craig Sager, rest in peace, or Don Cherry, now banished from the television, two notable sportscasters who are almost cartoonish in their suit game. I try to be very different, but yet on trend and tasteful. So thank you. But I did start it for that reason, right? So the reason I started the suit thing originally, before even the allowing meeting planners to pick my suit, was I get off stage, I just gave a presentation to however many hundreds or thousands of people, and I want people for the rest of that day and maybe the cocktail party that night to be able to, oh, that's Jay. Because then they can more easily find me, come up to me, ask a question, give me a business card, see if I want to come speak at their event, right? So Where's Waldo is a big part of it in a giant room full of people. So it was absolutely a strategy of sort of location initially. But then I realized it had a tremendous amount of word of mouth application as well. And then once we built the app for the meeting planners, then it became a real propellant for the business, because now the meeting planners tell that story to one another. And when they call, they say, I hear you're the guy who I get to pick the suit. And I'm like, bingo, this is working.
Oh my God, that is just so smart. Oh man. And frankly, I'm going to be writing about this, because right now I'm writing a new book about nonfiction branding. And I want to cite Jay Bear as, I'm going to call you the best visual personal brander out there. Because the cool thing is, you know, I hate to say this, but I don't want to pick on people, but there are some people who always have to wear the same color glasses frames, or have the same colored hair, or the same whatever that they make their kind of visual marker for themselves. Jay just said, I'm going to be wearing a plaid suit. And it works, and it works beautifully. So all you have to do is go to jbear.com and just poke around the site a little bit.
Yeah, you'll see some 50, samples.
Yeah, you're going to see about 50 different suit colors and combinations and all that stuff. And also, if you want to dress Jay Bear, just go to dressjbear.com. That's Bear, B-A-E-R.com. And you'll get a taste of just how visually tasty Mr. Bear can be.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much. And I'm going to have a whole database full of listeners from the show. Well, filling out the form.
You just might.
Yeah, it's like a tracking code. I like it.
Right. And by the way, they might be booking you. So I hope that works out for you.
Let's do it. I'm ready.
Hey, nonfiction branders. Did you know I wrote a book? Well, I did, and it's called Rotoma, the ROI of Social Media Top of Mind. I wrote it with my colleague Spencer X. Smith, and it's all about Rotoma, an acronym that means Return on Top of Mind Awareness. Bestselling author and NYU Stern School of Business professor Scott Galloway called it a book that starches the fluff from social media and helps managers allocate capital and find the unicorn among unicorns, ROI. And chief content officer at Marketing Pro Troughs, Ann Hanley said, "This isn't just a practical way to think about the return on social media. It's also a spot-on, accurate way to reframe your social efforts." Check out all the 5-star reviews on Amazon by searching Rotoma, R-O-T-O-M-A. Pick up your copy today and start building your personal, professional, and small business brand the Rotoma way. I want to touch on one aspect of the whole plaid thing that you kind of referred to, but I want to tie it directly to your new book.
Okay.
Or the most recent book you've put out called Talk Triggers, because yes. Clearly your tonsorial choices, is that the right word? Or no, tonsorial is your hair.
Well, sartorial, I think is the word.
Yeah, sartorial. Yes. Your sartorial choices are very distinct and very worthy of discussion with other people, like, "Hey, did you see the suit Jay was wearing today?" Is that part of your strategy to create a talk trigger so that people can literally be out there evangelizing for you, selling for you,
yes,
creating relationships for you before you even meet the other person on the end of that conversation?
DP, absolutely. I'm going to give you a little rant on talk triggers here for a second, if you don't mind.
Yeah, go ahead.
More than 50% of all purchases are influenced by word of mouth, and 91% of B2B purchases are influenced by word of mouth. Yet, fewer than 1% of businesses or individuals have an actual word of mouth strategy. Now, doesn't that seem strange?
It does.
Here's why that's true. All of us take word of mouth for granted. We assume that if we just run a good business, if we just do our job well, that people will notice that and talk about it. Just as you mentioned earlier about sort of sticking to your work and hoping that the work speaks for itself. The reality is that's not how people actually behave, though. Competency does not create conversations. It just does not. I've never had this conversation. I've never said, "DP, check this out. I want to tell you a story about last night. I had an experience and it was perfectly adequate." Nobody's ever had that conversation because there's no story there. So if you want your customers, your potential customers, your clients, your friends to talk about you, and trust me, you do, you have to give them a story to tell. And the story that they will tell is almost never about what you actually do or sell, because fulfilling what they hired you to do is not talkable. Right? That's why meeting planners don't often talk about me giving a speech, even if the speech is great, because they expected the speech is great because that's what they paid me to do. So the story is something that is related to your core value proposition, but is not your core value proposition, which is why we define a talk trigger as an operational choice. In my case, the operational choice is to always wear a plaid suit. It's an operational choice that is designed to create conversations. And I will submit to you that every business of every kind, and especially everybody interested in nonfiction branding, should have a talk trigger and should get that sorted out now.
Oh man, there is so much you're talking about right now that's making me go, "Oh, you're right on," because one of the concepts that I talk about all the time, and it's going to be in the new book, it was in the old book, is if you're not a brand, you're a commodity. Or what I like to say, brand versus commodity. If you're not the one, you're the other. You've got to brand yourself. If you are a CPA, certified public accountant, you are in a barrel of CPAs, and you are as good as the best and as bad as the worst. Get out of that barrel. How? I'm going to say via Jay Baer's technique of creating a talk
trigger. I actually have one. I have one for you.
Bring it.
I have one. Okay. So I love that you mentioned this. We didn't plan this, listeners.
I don't plan anything. Everybody knows that.
They know that. They know you didn't plan. You're exactly right about CPAs, right? Nobody has ever said this. "Hey, DP, I got my tax return. You won't believe it. All the numbers added up."
Right.
Right. That's what they're paying you to do, right? That's not talkable. There's not a story there. However, there is an accounting firm, small accounting firm, two principals, an associate, front desk person in Indianapolis. They're called Bogdanoff and Dodges. There are quite literally 10 to 15,000 accounting firms in the United States alone that do the exact same thing for roughly the exact same price. The only differentiator is where is their office located vis-a-vis your home or office. That's it. They do nothing different, except these guys have a talk trigger. Works like this. They answer every client call or email within 5 minutes every time. They have engineered the process in their organization so that somebody will get back to you within 5 minutes every time. Now, they are not my accountants. Maybe they should be. I've had a lot of accountants in my career. As far as I know, they were competent, but I don't tell stories about them. If my accountant called me back within 5 minutes every time and he doesn't, would I tell a story about that? Hell yeah, I would.
Yeah.
All they did was make a choice. They just made a choice to stand out. And if you don't make the choice to stand out, then you can't be complaining about the fact that people don't notice you because you have chosen to not be noticed.
Well, we're getting ready to wrap up this episode, but I'm telling you, Professor Bear has given us all a little bit of homework, and that is, what is your talk trigger? What thing that is outside your competence are you going to be known for, talked about for, recognized for, that can really project your personal brand into the stratosphere? I'm looking at what I'm doing going, God, what do I have a talk trigger? I have to think this through. Thanks, Jay. I've got some work to do now.
TalkTriggers.com. All the stuff is there. You got all kinds of videos. We got discussion guides, infographics, research. There's a talk trigger for the book, Talk Triggers. We didn't even talk about this. I should mention this just because it's relevant. Okay. It would be weird if I didn't have a talk trigger for a book about talk triggers. There's actually two. One, the cover of the book has alpacas on it and it is also hot pink. So you don't see that very often. It's a pretty unusual cover to see it in a store. Second, however, on the back of the book, it says, and I quote, "If you do not love this book unconditionally, send an email to the authors at authors@talktriggers.com, and they will buy you any other book of your choosing." Any book. You want a first edition Bible, whatever, we'll figure it out. That is 100% ironclad guarantee. We will do it. We have so far, in the many, many, many tens of thousands of books we have sold, we have given away two books. Two people were not satisfied. You'll love this. One guy emails me and says, "Jay, I didn't like the book. There weren't enough case studies." And I said, "I'm sorry to hear that. I felt like the 32 case studies that were in the book were enough, but okay, not really sure what you wanted there. Fine." And he ended up wanting like some out of print COBOL book or something for like $150, which I thought was a little cheeky, but hey, we made the offer and stand right by it. A while later, another guy emails and says, "Jay, I didn't like the book." And I said, "How come?" He's like, "There's too many case studies."
Okay.
And I said, "Yeah, I know all those business books with evidence are usually a problem." I said, "Have you met this other guy? Because it feels like you guys could have a great conversation about this book," and bought him one as well. So I make your listeners the same offer. Please, if you want to get a copy of the book, if you don't like it, no risk to you. I'll happy to buy you something else. I'll buy a DP's book.
Let me tell you, Jay Bear is the dude, and J-A-Y, Bear, B-A-E-R, and jbear.com is where you can see all about him and his speaking and his thought leadership from that side of the fence, if you will. And then over at convinceandconvert.com, you can learn more about his business that is tremendously successful. Either way, you're going to get a taste of this guy, and he's a giver, man. He's a giver. You just heard it, talktriggers.com. It sounds like that's where I'm going to be going this weekend to get my talk trigger figured out.
Hope you like alpacas.
Oh, I do. Well, anyway, that's it for this week's edition of the Nonfiction Brand Podcast. I'm DP Knuton, and I want to remind you to like, subscribe, refer, and review the podcast because that is the best way for people to find out about it. But really, I want to thank Jay Bear for being here. So again, for the Nonfiction Brand Podcast, I'm DP Knuton, and he is
Jay Bear.
And I'll be talking at you next week. Bye-bye.